Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Brennan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up $24. NASDAQ Futures up 74. Dow Futures up 203. As they're trying to bounce back a little bit. And the news this morning is China responds to U.S. after Treasury designates Beijing as a currency manipulator. Well, what do you think of that, Brendan?
I'm shocked.
When everybody does whatever they want to do with their currency, their own central bank makes their movements, and whenever one moves that you don't like in relation to yours,
it's manipulation.
It's always the other guy's fault, right?
But wasn't that really what Trump was arguing, that we needed to reduce interest rates just a while ago to strengthen our market and our money?
That was what he was arguing, but the question is, what Brendan is talking about is in theory, not just in theory, but probably in practice to a certain degree, and you never know to what degree. For instance, if somebody in Europe wants to put money in a bank, well, the interest rates are negative over there, in Germany for sure. I don't think they are in Britain, but in Germany they are. So somebody might say, well, gee, I'm going to go buy dollars and I'll put my money in the bank here and at least get 1% or 2% or whatever you can get. You can still probably get close to 2%. I'll kick that up on the Treasury curve here in a second. But so people are going to go buy dollars with euros.
Mm-hmm.
The problem comes is if you turn around and say, well, but I need the euros 6 months from now. I'm going to do a forward rate on the euro so I don't get caught in the currency problem. The forward is strictly going to be the difference in the two interest rates, right? Because there's no free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And plus some sort of commission, right? So you're sort of right back where you started from if you need to repatriate.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, yes, it's a situation where if your interest rates are higher, you can expect your currency to be higher than the other guys.
Mm-hmm.
But now, does that mean at some point, you know, what do you do? Does that mean that you if the other guys go negative, you have to go negative to save your currency?
Well, yeah. That was part of, well, not going negative, but at least dropping the interest rate was part of the argument for a couple of weeks ago for the Fed dropping theirs.
Okay, but they did. Now they're down to 2,
mm-hmm.
which is a very accommodative number.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now where do you go with that? I mean, mm-hmm. It's okay, it's accommodative. Now do you have to go down to -2 just because somebody else did it?
Well, I know that's the argument, but why isn't that currency manipulation if China's move is currency manipulation?
Well, that's the point. You get to accuse other people of that all the time.
Yeah, I know, but that's my question to you. Yeah. Is why is it manipulation if Europe or China or Japan or anybody else is dropping their interest rates or increasing their interest rates for that matter because they think their economic conditions are such that that's warranted?
As
but
an attorney,
it's not when we do.
As an attorney, you know that it's I can recognize pornography when I see it.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, we're not in the business right now, for whatever reason, of accusing Mario Draghi of being a currency manipulator, but mm-hmm. he clearly is,
mm-hmm.
and so are we. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, everybody does it to a certain extent. I mean,
but isn't that the nature of Fed and its equivalents, like the ECB and China? I mean, it's to look at your economy and look at your money supply and do the best for your country. Isn't that the argument, that what the independence of the Fed should do?
Well, then the question is, best for who?
Well, for us, obviously.
No, but I'm saying, in every country,
yeah, it's every best country, for who? The answer is the same. It's the best for us.
But even in the country, is it the best for you or me?
Mm-hmm. Well, it may or may not be. But I mean, I think the overall look is the overall perspective is whether the currency manipulations or the currency fluctuations. Why don't we use currency fluctuations instead of manipulation? Is it overall strengthening
manipulation
or hurting?
It's if you like the guy, he's careful. If you don't, he's cheap.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other argument that my freedom fighter is your terrorist.
That's exactly right.
It all depends on the perspective, but I'm still trying to understand why it's manipulation on one side but not on the other side.
I'm going to say it probably is on both sides.
Okay.
Or isn't on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because the market moves the way the market moves.
Right, and there's still going to be reactions to the Chinese change and fluctuations in their currency as a result of what their currency is doing.
I think what the Chinese did for a while is allow it to move. And didn't prop it up,
mm-hmm.
because this is going to happen like all the time. Because here's it comes down to, and this is the basic piece. I think that let's put it this way: I'm not an expert on international currency flows, but if you have some basic principles, Brendan, when I say principles, some basic economic laws, everything is somewhat of a supply and demand situation. And I think if the listeners take anything away from the years they've been listening to me on the show, don't take my predictions on the Bears or the Cubs or anything like that, because you'll forget that. Even on individual stocks, I wouldn't do that either. But two things you want to listen to me about. One is how to hedge your portfolio. And the second is, look what's happening, for instance, in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when you say negative interest rates, what does that really mean? It means that they're printing money and buying stuff with it to the point where, if you buy a bond from somebody, that's I buy a 10-year note from somebody and I give them whatever $10,000 for it, and at the end of 10 years, the interest in the bond itself are going to come out to $10,000, and you say, why would I do anybody that stupid? You know, there's no interest rate at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Fed comes to me and buys it, or the European Central Bank buys it at an even higher price from me. So at the end of 10 years, they come back with negative. Now, nobody would do that on their own. Only a government would be stupid enough to do that. But now, what are they doing? They essentially are printing money, and when the Fed for to print money, in order to get it into circulation, what do you have to do? You got to buy something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I mean, if the Fed decides they're going to create cash, well, I guess in theory, you could get a big suitcase and drop it in the middle of state in Madison and just run,
mm-hmm.
and let people pick it up. But that's a moral hazard, right? but if you call Goldman Sachs or somebody, you tell them you're buying bonds, they front run you and pay a commission, that's okay because it's Goldman Sachs,
mm-hmm.
right? So still the discipline we have is you got to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
So in Europe, they're putting money into the system. But what's really happening, Brendan? They're creating more euro dollars. All right. And if we don't create any more dollars, they don't create them as fast, or if they don't create any more pounds or as fast, or Swiss francs, what's going to happen? Just by definition, the value of the euro dollar is going to go down versus the other currency because there's more of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, these guys, there used to be $90 billion, and now there's 100.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no new, there's not $10 billion more of a Mercedes is to sell or anything like that. It's just cash.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to sit there and go, wait a minute, my $1,000 that I used to be worth, you know, 750 euros. Guess what? I only want, you know, it's only going to be worth 700 euros now, or the other way around. It's going to be, mm-hmm. yeah, no, it's going to be worth 700. I want less.
Mm-hmm.
And, no, wait a minute, I'm going to need more. Okay. So it gets complicated when you speak off your head. But you want it to be, I now want, for my dollar, I want just like the yuan. I'm going to get 7 euro. The yuan, I'm now getting 7 when I used to get 6.
Mm-hmm.
That's what causes it to go the other way. Now, but it all comes back to the same thing. The central bank's pouring money in, and they're trying to beggar thy neighbor. Now, what you'd like to do, okay, in the old days, if you could lower your currency. Okay, and we're making cars, and the Germans are making cars. If the dollar drops, okay, and if we're just talking about cars, Now the price of the Chevy now becomes cheaper in Europe because every euro dollar now can command more dollars, so you can buy a Chevy cheap. Correct? In euro dollars you can mm-hmm. buy the Chevy cheaper. It goes the other way, we get to buy the Mercedes cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So for those people, for those industries, there's no doubt that in the short run, we'd like to have the dollar drop. They'd like to have the euro dollar drop.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's only one piece of the pie. And I was on a show with Joan Esposito yesterday, and I was explaining to her. I said, but you got to look at it this way, too, Joan. I said, I'm going to be nice to you. I'm only going to give you two pieces of the puzzle, and there's actually probably like 100. But now, so for Chinese widget makers, the line going down helps them, at least in the short run. Because now on a world stage, and for their money, they can sell more widgets. However, if they take their money that they made and try and go buy a beer in London, the price of the beer is higher.
Mm-hmm.
So the total wealth of the Chinese land is actually less. Okay? But now the problem comes down to, there's $3 trillion in China where people over there have borrowed on dollar-denominated debt.
Mm-hmm.
Now all that debt, the interest is dollar denominated, which I just said. So now if my interest payment to the U.S. on my note used to be 100,000 yuan a month, it's now 110. So you're screwing that guy
mm-hmm.
big time, right? Now to the point where maybe he now can't pay it. So if you have a combination of economy slowing in China and all this debt service going higher and higher, I mean, that's what, for a long time, and it may still be today, matter of fact, it probably is, your mortgages that were given out in Poland were given out denominated in Swiss francs. Well, at one point, the Polish dollar, or whatever it is, dropped by 50% versus the Swiss franc. So everybody's, so somebody making, whatever he's making in Poland, radios, or whatever the hell they do, is probably fat and happy because he's selling radios someplace better than he did. But if he has a house payment, his house payment just went up by 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you do this stuff, you absolutely cannot do one thing. And I was complicating the hell out of it on a radio station yesterday. I said, but you asked me the question, I got to give you the whole answer. And she says, well, nobody talks like that there's people hurt and people helped. And I said, well, but that's
the nature of the economy.
Yeah, it's the nature of the way it is. And, I mean, everybody points on the reason why they did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm helping this guy out or I'm helping that guy out. But you don't really, plus the other untoward thing, and I'm assuming this happened in China, because there's crooks there like there are everywhere. There's crooks here. Is when we were, at one point, PTI was very active in Mexico. And when the new peso contract came out on the for the CME, we were 40% of the open interest in that, because we had a lot of connections down there. And actually, my brother Dan, I think Dr. J might have helped him, wrote the test for somebody to be a trader on their new futures exchange down there, which is interesting. I'm on the phone. I go, they don't even have a test. Well, they do now. And I go, did you guys have anything to do with that? Well, sort of. We, like, wrote it. Okay. Anyway, it's a while ago. And so I said to a bunch of guys who were up here, and they were, you know, pretty high-end dudes. I said, you know, you guys had that currency devaluation a while back. Boy, that must have been awful. Why do you say that? Well, okay. Feed me. If you knew it was coming, you take all your money. Most of the high-end Mexican dudes would take all their money and put it offshore every night. And they absolutely did the night they knew that the devaluation was coming. So
mm-hmm.
let's say you have X number of
pesos. You don't think that was a coincidence?
I do think it was absolutely not a coincidence.
In good foresight on the economic analysis they were doing?
What happens is the next day you bring the dollars back, you now have 10% more pesos, you're 10% richer than any neighbor that's around you. And you can't tell me that a lot of people in China didn't get their yuan out of there someplace into dollars. Now, when they come back, they're even richer over there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you really don't want these kind of moves. I mean, you really don't. I mean, you really don't. You want a market, for instance, to be priced right, whatever that means. Competitively, you know, fundamentally sound, whatever it happens to be. You don't want a government to run up a market because the president thinks that's his scorecard, or the Fed realizes that that's where the one percenters are or something. You don't want to run it up too high, because I believe even in this world, eventually, things will correct. And when it runs back the other way, and you might say, well, why the hell are you worried about a stock going from 140 to 180 and going back to 140? Well, because people probably bought it at 140 on margin. A lot of people do. When it went to 180, maybe we're forced to, you know, maybe they didn't sell it, or maybe somebody bought it at 180, and when it came down to 140, now I got a margin call. Or the guy who bought it at 140 sold it at 180 has to pay taxes on $40. The guy who bought it at 140 and sold it at 180 and sold it at 140 only gets to take off $3,000 for the rest of his life. So there's real reasons to think that a market that goes way up and comes way down, even if you end up at the same place, your people are net losers. Your government's a net winner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the you saw how terrific California did in 2000 when, you know, the dot bomb when things went way up and people sold their stocks at the highs, and mm-hmm. we're all along in there, but people made the money, owed California a whole bunch of money, and when it crashed, it didn't cost California really anything, unless you had profits before, you could go against those profits before, but so they probably lost something. But I got a question. I've asked this from 10 or 12 very intelligent people, and I'll dig up the article here. Even Matty Weber. If you define a mass shooting as four people or more with two being killed, how many of them have happened in the U.S. this year?
How many have happened in Chicago this year?
Well, I'm giving you the U.S.
that is an interesting question. I mean, and different law enforcement agencies define mass shootings and mass killings differently.
Well, this is somebody did this, and it's the definition. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can make another one, and it should be Stocks and Jocks definition. And Matty Weber's right. The way he was saying, it's not what I think of as a mass shooting. I think of one where it's random. You don't even know who you're killing, that kind of thing. So this kind of is a blend of all that.
Right, but I think the one that the federal government uses, maybe it's the FBI definition, is four or more people who are shot in a public setting at one time.
Two of them dead.
I thought it was three or four.
There's
a number of, like, yeah. But so many people shot. I think it's four or five people shot or killed in a public setting without warning.
Right. Okay.
Now, I don't understand why that does not include things like on the south side or the west side of Chicago.
It does.
Or those don't count as mass shootings in the media when you're looking at the media coverage.
If this is strictly, again, we can argue about the definition, but the first definition on the table wins, and mm-hmm. this is the definition this article's about. So, in any situation where four people are shot and two dead, they're considering that a mass shooting. Now, Maddie's right. We would probably want a second cut at that and say it's people you don't know. Or
well, here's what I say. First of all, in Chicago, as many of the shootings as we have, it's very rare that one person shoots four people. That doesn't happen that often. So people constantly point at Chicago, and because they see the total numbers. You know, over the weekend, 40 people were shot. You know, five people were dead or six people were dead, something like that. But that's not one person shooting 40 people. That's dozens and dozens of gang members shooting at dozens and dozens of gang members.
Right, at different sites.
At different sites, yeah. Different mm-hmm. locations. And so very rarely does one of those qualify as a mass shooting. When it does happen, though, it does qualify. If one person shoots four people and two of them die, by that definition, that counts as a mass shooting.
That's right.
However,
but that didn't happen over the weekend. When you look at the coverage given to El Paso and to Dayton, they didn't cover a similar situation in Garfield, or was it Douglas Park on the west side?
Yeah.
Where there were seven or eight people shot, and I think two of them died. But that was not included in what's covered over the weekend.
Well, and if that was one person that did that, which I don't think it was, but...
Okay, maybe that's the distinction.
That's the, I mean, yeah, okay. If you have seven people shooting at seven people,
mm-hmm.
which is what happens on weekends on the south and west sides in the city, that's not by definition a mass shooting. That's seven people shooting at seven people. Doesn't make it right. In fact, it's disgusting.
No, you're right. I understand your point.
Yeah, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. The thing that the American people, I think, can all agree on is when a disgruntled, you know, ex-husband shoots the wife and the new boyfriend, it sucks and it's bad, but we don't really consider that a mass shooting. When gang members shoot at gang members, it sucks and it's bad, but we don't consider that a mass shooting.
Mm-hmm.
What we consider a mass shooting is when a person goes into a public place and randomly starts spraying fire at yeah. people that they don't know for mm-hmm. no apparent reason. At mm-hmm. a Walmart or at a concert or
at a church
or at something like that, where people that are just completely unaffiliated with a gang, or people that are completely unaffiliated with a disgruntled ex-husband or ex-wife or whatever. Again, those things are tragic and bad in their own way, but they're, I don't want to say justified, but they at least make sense. And as humans, we want our stuff to make sense. And mm-hmm. when someone just opens fire on you and you're at a baseball game, and that hasn't happened yet, but hopefully, and hopefully it doesn't, but it makes you wonder. I was at a baseball game Sunday, and you couldn't help but think, wow, we're all sitting ducks here in the bleachers.
Yep.
I mean, that is a mass shooting, and that's what I think we can all agree on that we would like to prevent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go to a place called the Gun Violence Archive. That's where all this, these stats are coming from. You know who I feel like right now, though, with you two guys? I'm not going to cast any aspersions or anything, but I feel like Jackie Gleason, and you asked the question. Where he would have Crazy Guggenheim and Jane Mansfield and a couple other characters on there, and he would say something like, "Who is buried in Grant's tomb?" And everybody, "Oh, that's a trick question. I can't believe you asked this." The question was, if you define gun violence or a mass shooting as four people, two of them dead, how many of them do you think have been this year?
Well, I know the answer.
You know the answer.
But I would have, and I think I would have guessed close to the answer even if I didn't know it.
Everybody else has been
way
off.
It's like 250.
You know the answer. You know, you read it. You're over there digging around on your computer.
Now, I'm not digging around on the computer for that. I knew that over the weekend because I've heard it in various reports.
Oh, all right.
Reports.
Okay. Well, everybody who hasn't heard it, and these were some of the attorneys last night in the Lago, and then people that, one of the guys is attorney for the Fraternal Order of Police.
Which is more than one a day.
Yeah. Their numbers have been, Steph was 35, Audrey was 50.
Oh, no.
Yeah, everybody was, and this guy was 25.
Mm-hmm.
And some architect who's been in Chicago forever, a brilliant guy, he was like 50. Mm-hmm. Nobody. I mean, I'm not so sure. I would have guessed 251 either. To be honest with you,
I wouldn't have guessed that high until I heard the reports. But I mean, it's shocking.
But the thing is that even so, if that is the definition that we're all going by, and it's a consistent definition across all reports, four shot by one person, two of them dead, equals a mass shooting. Whether it's 25, 50, 100, or 250, which it sadly is. The next, like, 20 civilized countries, it's like 0, 0, yeah. 1, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, and then 250.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
It's more than one a day.
I mean, it's... I don't understand why common sense thinking people can't look at that and say, okay, this is a problem, and we could all be next, and I don't want to be next, so let's... get our heads out of the sand, and let's actually start trying some things out. Whether, you know, what's the first step? I don't know, but let's meet in the middle. I mean, seriously. Otherwise, people are going to stop going to public places. I mean, and maybe it never gets to that point, but at least it's going to be in the back of your mind,
sucks. How could it not be in the back of your mind? They still haven't caught the bleep to shout all the people to Lane Bryant in Orleans.
In the suburbs, you're right.
He wondered how many people he killed. He hopped on I-80 and was gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did he also do one of these other ones? I mean, the same dude. Who knows? Maybe died of an overdose, hopefully. I mean,
also, now, I was watching WGN News last night, which I typically do, especially if the Cubs happen to be coming on at 7, and I'll have the news on at 6 leading up to the game. And they had a Northwestern University mental health person on that's been studying mental health cases against violent crimes and mass shootings, specifically since the 1980s. And this lady has been doing that for 40 years and said that, by the way, in mass shootings, somebody that's clinically defined as mentally ill happens in less than 4% of mass shootings.
You mean in terms clinically defined where they couldn't get a gun?
Right.
Well, I would agree with that. Plus,
mm-hmm. these people are not mentally ill. These people are...
That's a nice excuse.
Xenophobic, racist, you know, typically, you know, hate-filled people you know, either hate Mexicans or hate gay people or hate Muslims or hate whatever, and they write about it. They are members of these websites. There's all kinds of red flags all across the way. There's usually examples of domestic violence. There's usually examples of violence at whatever school they were at, and... Okay. There's years and years of red flags, and then they finally get access to a gun, and then they let it all out.
And how many of those people are also playing video games?
everyone plays video games.
No, I mean, because the other...
is hilarious. I played video games my whole life.
But that's the other thing that's been coming out the last couple of days about mental illness and violence.
Or they listen
to
rock and roll.
Or rock and roll, okay.
Or they listen to hip-hop.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, they might also be communicating.
No, actually, they're never black, so they don't.
They might be listening to other people on the web that think like them.
That's exactly what it is.
They maybe listen to news reports to people who act and think like them.
I'm going to lob one other one in there, but I don't want to be one of those people that, you know, every black person, no matter how many people they killed or how many people they robbed, is a good guy because he didn't get enough chow when he was five or something. I mean, I'm not one of those bleeding heart kind of people. I mean, I think once you reach the age of reason, this is on you. But I will say this, I mean, despite, you know, it's not, I mean, Trump is the obvious guy you would point to by telling everybody how good life is under him. But Obama did the same thing. I mean, I would, very few people, I mean, actually there's more of them, I think, than we know. And we've talked about it on this show a lot. I think it's one of the reasons why we like doing it. I think people like listening, or if they like listening, but they feel they learned something. But is, I don't think from 2000 to 2008 to today, the amount of, I'll say the amount of crap that has entered people's lives economically. And if you choose to look at it that way, where people don't have anywhere near the life they used to have. I know people from the trading floor, the amount of suicides in the trading floor is pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's people that have had horrible divorces. I mean, if you want to listen to the state of America, I think it's important to listen to Michael Moore's tape as to why Trump was going to be elected.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's talking about the guys who work in the auto industry, in this industry, that industry, whatever it was, you know, and you could say, that guy didn't deserve to make that much. Well, it's BS. But the fact is, the guy lost the house, lost the bass boat, lost the car, lost the wife, and all he cares about is taking it out on somebody because other people seem to be doing better and telling him, he was greedy, he was this, he was that.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of desperation in this country is way worse than I think anybody gives it a chance to.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody points at the good stuff and they don't point at any of the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Mexican people and you're stupid enough to say, and I do mean that, literally, if you're stupid enough to say they don't pay any taxes and they don't do this, they don't do that, and you
and they took my job.
Yeah, and they took you, and all of a sudden your taxes are going up, 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 and all people tell you is how these other people aren't paying, is untrue as it is. Because obviously sales tax, property tax, everybody pays. Gas tax, you name it. And so to say those people don't pay any taxes is so totally ignorant. But somebody says, well, you know, I'm going broke. I've been declared bankruptcy. This is my last gas. I can't pay my property tax. My wife's gone. I'm going to go kill some of these people. I don't know. What causes somebody to take that last step? Whether there's...
The problem is that typically the mass shooters are like 21-year-old white kids that don't apply to any of that. But
okay.
So not always.
Then, well, that's definitely another story. There are some that are older. Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with those kids. I mean, are they on something or what? We need a bunch of people to try and figure it out.
In fact, the guy who was charged with the assault in El Paso apparently came from a pretty affluent suburb of Dallas.
Yeah, I mean, the Aurora, Colorado guy, the Columbine kids, mm-hmm. all these kids, they're all just.
But do we remember?
Hate-filled 20 plus year old white kids that come from suburban families.
We've had a few people. The guy matter of fact, one of the guys last night I was having a cocktail with, he's got the architectural deal. He's remodeling the place where his disgruntled employee in Aurora shot everybody. Mm-hmm. He's remodeling the place. I said, that place has got to be haunted. But I mean, these places, that Pulse nightclub, how old was that guy? I don't know. Texas Church? That guy
20s.
Las Vegas? He was
older.
The
Vegas guy, yeah, and he was rich.
Yeah, what mm-hmm. about the Tree of Life Signia?
Well,
Parkland?
He was also losing a lot in his gambling.
Yeah,
for the year or so before the shooting in Las Vegas,
Virginia Tech. Well, Oklahoma City was; those guys were older. They mm-hmm. blew that place up.
Timothy McVeigh, he wasn't old.
Well, he wasn't.
He was in his 30s.
Yeah, he wasn't. And the guy with him was in his 40s, wasn't he?
Maddie doesn't think 30s is old anymore.
Well, it's not. Most I'm willing to bet that by percentage, most of these the big famous mass shootings are white guys in their 20s.
Yeah,
that have.
I agree with you. I think
I would agree. Well, University of Texas, he was older, right? That's way back. Anyway, S&P futures, I'll get them in a second here. We'll talk about it when we come back. S&P futures, I think, are still up 25.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year. at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Socks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Out. He's Mr. Brendan Cornan. He's Mr. Matt Weber. I'm trying to get my machine up here because we were talking during the break. Matty, why don't you do Trevi Weather Sports, then I'll do the other stuff.
I can do that. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a decent start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, at least coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. We have no issues, but we do have a crash on the Eisenhower eastbound before 17th Avenue. That's causing some delays, so keep that in mind. No issues on the Stevenson. Down on the south side, a couple of issues. We had an earlier crash on the Bishop Ford on the inbound side just before Doty Avenue. Everything finally opened from the earlier two semi crash. One had lost its load of wine. That happened earlier this morning. So that is finally reopened, but the Bishop Ford
was
is still...
Was it good wine?
Good question. The Bishop Ford is still pretty jammed up, though. So keep that in mind as you're heading out this morning, that you're going to see some extra travel times on the Bishop Ford. But everything else is looking okay out there from a traffic perspective. Weather today, we have some rain in the forecast here in Chicago. First time in a couple of weeks that we've had any sort of rain in the forecast. But we will have sunshine later on and a high of 79, so we cool off a bit. Right now, it's mostly cloudy and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104 today. Right now, it's mostly clear and 89. In sports, Cubs were down 2-1 in the sixth inning last night and then rallied to score five straight to take a 6-2 lead. They held on to beat the Oakland A's 6-5 for their fourth straight win. Cardinals were blown out in Los Angeles, so the Cubs now have a 2.5 game lead over the St. Louis Cardinals in the NL Central. White Sox topped the Detroit Tigers 7-4. White Sox are playing good ball of late. They've won 3 out of 4 as they start to try to get some momentum here heading into the dog days of summer, if you will. And lastly, the Diamondbacks, as my screen loads up here, the Diamondbacks lost to the Phillies 7-3. Chief.
I'm still struggling with my machine, so let's start out with Joel, then I'll do all the rest of it. Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well. You going to do your little rundown there, buddy?
Well, if you could, yeah. I got so much stuff up here. I was looking at Treasury yield curves, and I managed to screw up my machine somehow.
Well, the S&P futures are on the rebound. They're trading up 32 handles at 28.62. Crude back over 55 by not much, up 32 cents. Gold and silver are basically flat today. And I don't know if you guys give Bitcoin at all, but Bitcoin futures, after being up $700, are now flat on the session. So what else do you like to throw in there, Chief?
Well, what do you make of the I didn't even look at Bitcoin yesterday. I was watching the rest of the stuff and dealing with my clients all day. When people start talking about these currencies up and down all over the place, does that bring people to think there maybe should be an alternative?
A little bit, yeah. It does give it a little bit of a bid, you know, alternative currencies, you know, and there's not too many out there besides Bitcoin. It was kind of quiet during the day. That thing likes to move at night, you know, when there's a little bit less liquidity, you can move it around. So for you Bitcoin futures traders, it did get up over 12,000 overnight, 12,500, but it settled back to unchanged. 10,000 just seems to be like the magical level in there. It goes down there and sits for a while, and you think it's dead, and then it rebounds. High, the last move, was closer towards 14,000.
Well, I've got the DAX up 71. It's 0.6%. FTSE up 9, which 0.1%, that's not much of a bounce there, is it, Joel? Kick around up 50.
No.
0.1%. So they're not doing much good at all, really, on the bounce back here. We're back, 20% of what we were down yesterday, which isn't, you know, a whole lot. We've got the Nikkei actually down again, down 134, 0.6%. Shanghai down another 43, 1.6. Hang Seng down 175, 0.7. We've got gold, which we didn't mention, up another 230, 1478. So, actually, in the midst of the carnage yesterday, Joel, my guys had a good day.
Man, did you see that move at 6 o'clock last night in the S&P futures?
Yeah.
Oh my lord.
Well, they opened down 20. I was still in the office. They opened down 20. They dropped probably 15 points after the close. That's why you see your S&P futures and stuff were down way more than the Dow. The Dow stopped going down at 3, and the rest of the stuff kept going down. And then at 5 o'clock, they opened down another 20. So we had
And you know what? I don't know if you have traders or / investors or swing traders on your show or not on your show, but your listening audience. And I'll just say two things observing these markets over the years. Number one, you know, have an out if you're doing something short term. And secondly, you can also trade a little bit smaller because you're going to get, you know, multiple standard deviation moves. And the third thing, and I think the most important thing is like, don't be afraid to put orders out there because the market's looking for liquidity and you get done. Like, just don't sit there and stare at the screen. If you have a target on something, put it out there. You're going to get done. Don't have any regrets. You know, add liquidity. I mean, these kind of markets are fun. You got to be aggressive, but you also, you know, have to take calculated risks. So I'm not sure your listeners, what their style of trading is, but get in there, add some liquidity, and you'll be rewarded.
Well, it definitely is. We've had a couple of fills, you know, in the last quarter last year more than yesterday, but get a lot of spreads on. We do a lot of spread trading, which most people don't. So, I mean, obviously you're getting, I mean, everybody at home, how can I say this charitably, Joel? Everybody at home that somehow thinks that you've got this all figured out, especially if it's more complex, if it's option trading or futures trading, compared to a professional, you're just not. I mean, it's like me saying I could be a pro golfer. No, I can't. I mean, those guys have done that for 35 years and they know what the hell they're doing. I mean, it's a whole different, I mean, but you're right. We have, my guy who puts stuff in for me. You've met him, Jim. If you see markets that are kind of wide and we have a spread that we have for a bunch of people, we'll put it in there. Like you say, if you're the only piece of liquidity, somebody's liable to jump on you way before you should be filled. And it doesn't hurt to put it in. There's no charge.
Yeah, and I'm not just talking about random, you know, trying to pick, you know, bottoms or tops or things like that. It's like, you know, your plan. Don't let the volatility in the market have you deviate from your long-term plan.
If you're chasing, volatility hurts you. If you've planned for it or protected and have a spread out of some kind, volatility helps you because you're the only person not being hurt.
I agree, and we got a nice rebound going on this morning after a wild day yesterday. Almost 100 points off the low, believe it or not. The S&P futures 27.75 is low. Maybe a day of stabilization here. I mean, that's what you need to see. Just the market come down, the vol come down. If that happens, then we have a chance of going back up. if we keep, you know, the longer we just keep ripping 20, 30, 40 handles like this, less of a probability. But, man, now what do you do? Now you're 90 points off the low of the day, you know? Are you chasing by buying here? I don't know. But some good markets here, that's for sure.
Well, the I ran a few traders last night because I was over at the gym and so forth. And you know what? As much as I will try and say, Joel, tongue-in-cheek, although everybody knows my feelings about actually the last few administrations, but the I'll say whatever these guys are doing, the information that's coming out of the White House and really the Fed is, I'll use the term, I'll be nice and say it's very tradable. I mean, we're talking about massive market moves based on tweets, based on Chinese. I mean, what about the? But I mean, I don't trust the Chinese anymore than I do our people. Matter of fact, less. You can't tell me that people in China didn't front run that move last night. That they're all of a sudden going to support their currency.
No. Oh, it. I mean, it's what it's just this day and age that we've come to, Chief. I mean, believe it or not, you got to pay attention to your Twitter feed. I mean, I'm not going to make a short term, you know, trading decision based on that, but these moves are undeniable, and you know, it's an uneasy feeling. I just like, I got to hop here. In 1 second, I just want to say, you know, just from a longer term, and you know, I always talk short term, man, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And you got uncertainty, you know, over interest rates. I know they're going down. Everyone's convinced about it, but is it signaling a major recession? You have a lot of uncertainty over the trade deal, and you got an election. So I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I don't think it's too big of a limb. I mean, I think this is what you're going to see until the election, and who knows what the hell is going to happen after the election here. But the market does not like uncertainty, and that's what the market's got written all over it. So I'll end with that and a go blue.
Go, talk to you next week, buddy.
Okay, thanks.
We got S&P futures up 27. We got NASDAQ futures up 88. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Look at them yo-yos. That's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks are free.
Well, don't pay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. Mr. Brendan Cornan. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 28.25. They bounced back huge from being down pretty heavy again last night. The Chinese claim that they're going to stabilize their currency or help a little bit. Of course, nobody front-ran that one, I don't think. Kenny got the call, I hear. SP Futures up 87. So, Kenny, I hear you not only got the call from the White House, you got the call from Beijing.
Yeah. I was on the receiving end of both of those calls. You're right. It was really unbelievable after, certainly after what happened yesterday, the action that the market took, and then as we accused them of being a manipulator right after the bell. You saw, or maybe you didn't, but futures continued to plunge overnight about 8 p.m. last night. They were down. Dow futures were up another 600 points. S&P was down, pierced its long-term 200-day moving average, which is 2790, traded as low as 2775. Before China came out and pegged it, and then all of a sudden you saw that kind of turn around in the market. So we went from negative to positive, and that's all very relative, because we are up at the moment, you know, like you said, 27 points on the S&P. But let's see how the day goes. Look, I think there was a lot of damage done yesterday, at least in the short term. I do think we're going to test low. We may get a bounce today. They just came out just now, China, and said that the yuan will not weaken any further. So is that a sign that, you know, they're going to jump in now and stabilize it? Is that a sign that they're not going to, that they're going to control it? I don't know. I certainly think the markets are going to rally off of that news, because that'll be viewed as a positive. But I think it'll be a dead cat bounce, at least for a while, right? Volatility has spiked enormously, and that always leaves, you know, a couple of weeks of continued volatility until the markets kind of resettle. So I think we're in for a little bit of volatility, certainly over the next couple of weeks. Don't forget, it is August. Tends to be a quiet month in terms of people. A lot of Europe's on vacation. U.S. will go on vacation for the last 2 weeks of August anyway. So less participation always creates more volatility. So just strap in a little bit, because I think it's going to continue to be a little bit of a ride.
What I'm getting this sort of feeling, Kenny, and I, you know, it's hard to project the hair on the back of your neck to other people, but I'm getting this feeling even from supporters of various administrations around the world, Draghi and everybody else, that most people are getting the feeling that maybe these people don't know what the hell they're doing.
Are we talking about the trade negotiators?
Well, we're talking about trade negotiations, and I was doing some research last night. I mean, I'm trying not to just shoot this out of my behind, but I'm not sure in China if you were going to drop the yuan to make your manufacturers a little more competitive. I'm not so sure you're gaining anything, because they've got $3 trillion in dollar-denominated debt whose people's interest rate just went up, or interest costs.
Right.
So I don't know that in the world economy that we have, if administrations in any one of these places could even know the ramifications of what they're doing, even if they were really bright and cared, which I'm not so sure our people do.
I think, you know, it's interesting. I think that yesterday's action was more a poke in the eye at Trump and the administration. I think they do know what they're doing, but I think that yesterday's action, or Sunday night's action in China, was really a poke in the eye, right? So saying to Trump, back down, stop throwing fuel on the fire. We've got other tools in our toolbox. Now, that may not be the smartest way to go about it, but I think it certainly took the attention at the moment away from Trump and try to, at least yesterday, kind of put them in a sense of control. Now, I think overnight, you know, they realize, which is why now they came out this morning and they say, you know, we've stabilized it, it won't fall any further, because I think they realize that, you know, there's a lot of other implications there. And so, that may be true. Let's see if it's successful in bringing everyone back to the table. The problem is, though, now that, you know, how do you come back to the table without losing face, right? Certainly Trump's not going to come back to the table without losing face, and you can't expect the Chinese to, so there's going to be lots of delicate negotiations to try to make, like, both sides won, but we need to come back to the table.
Well,
that's going to be the dance.
He's treating everybody like the painter he doesn't pay to one of his buildings. And you know what?
Yeah.
A lot of times people, they push back. You get another bull in the field.
That's right. And I think that's what, I think last Thursday when it was clear that Mnuchin came home and Lighthizer came back to Washington, D.C. without a deal or any closer to a deal, you know, he then makes this announcement about imposing these new tariffs. You almost have to wonder, did he make that decision on his own? Did he have a conversation with anybody? Was it really the smartest thing to do? Because in retrospect now, you know, people will say, well, you know, he's standing up. And yeah, he might be standing up, and we do need to renegotiate trade. I do get that. But, you know, continue to throw fuel on the fire is not helpful at all. And so I think it gets frustrating. I think it certainly gets frustrating for investors, especially today. If yesterday the market's down 600 and then China comes out today and says, oh, no, everything's fine, and the market's going to rally 600. Talk about manipulation and how people
feel about,
you know, kind of the market. That's going to be the next question.
Well, I'm telling you, Kenny, I must have had three calls last night, people saying, You haven't gone so far as to say the guy's not trading this. Somebody is, Kirshner, somebody is.
Well, I hear you. Yeah, you and I talk about that all the time, because whether it's an announcement about interest rates, whether it's an announcement about tariffs, whatever, he seems to, you know, you wonder who's got that information and what do people's trading accounts look like. And I've suggested that a number of times, that we should start looking at, you know, people within the administration, what are they actually doing? Because you're right. It does get, there are a lot of people that ask that question. They ask the question all the time because it feels that way, right? It feels manipulated.
Well, I mean, but who's going to, if you come out with that, it's only the Democrats that want to hurt the poor president and are always after the poor guy. I mean, and then, you know, I mean, it's, the world is political. I mean, law enforcement is politically now, too. I mean, I've never seen a guy politicize law enforcement like this guy has. It maybe always has been political. It probably always has been that way a little bit. I'm not that naive, or at least try not to be. But nobody's politicized it this way. I mean, the only reason why people are coming after me is because the policeman who saw me going 90 miles an hour is a Democrat. Are you kidding me? I mean, here's the radar thing. You're going 90 miles an hour. But if he was a Republican, he wouldn't have pulled me over, or the other way around. But I've never seen anything like that before. I mean,
I hear you, and it's gonna, listen, and in that sense, and you know what I've talked about, it's only gonna get uglier. You know, we got another 17 months of this, and so it's just gonna get uglier and uglier as we move through, the whole election cycle, right? And then the other issue is yesterday, what came up, and what I was talking to a lot of people about was, do they really wanna make a deal right now, or are they gonna play that card, that they're gonna stretch this out, they're not really gonna negotiate because they're gonna make a bet on who wins the White House, and they're betting, are they betting that Trump's going to lose and the Democrats going to come in, and so then the pressure will be off? I mean, you know, look, that's another 16 months of all this crap going back and forth. It's going to be a long 16 months.
Well, the guy who's setting all that up is Trump. He's the one saying that.
Yeah, that's right.
That when I win the election, then I'll really be hard on these guys and they'll have to make a deal. They should make a deal now because it's going to get even worse for them. I've heard the guy say that like four times.
Yeah, well, no, he said it, and you're right. I think he has, and he is setting it up. I think the Chinese, though, it's interesting to see whether or not they're going to make that bet. Right? Are they going to bet that they're going to wait and Trump's going to lose? Because if Trump wins, he's right. It could get more difficult. Right?
Well, I don't get the. To me, Kenny, we're going at this. And I was talking to some people last night. And I said we're going at this all wrong. If intellectual property is the problem, and if Chinese buying stuff over here is the problem, then guess what? They can't buy stuff over here. And if somebody gives them intellectual property, the crime is on the person on this end, not on their end. I mean, how do you expect to talk the Chinese into not asking while it remains legal to give? I mean, to me, I'm not a law theorist at all, but to me, that is so ass backwards. I can't even begin. You know, you don't try and make it a crime for Hitler to not want the plans for the P-51 Mustang. You make it a crime for the guy here to give it to him.
Right.
I mean, where am I wrong with that? I mean, I I mean, how
no,
is
no,
it?
I hear you. I think you're absolutely right.
I mean, because here we still have, if Chinese people enter this country with a lot of money and give up 10 jabs, we're giving them citizenship for them and their family and their cousins, right?
Right.
I mean, does anybody even know that that plan exists in this country? I mean, how many people know that? I mean, very few. I mean, you can't get into the University of Illinois here because they want Chinese people that are paying more dough. I mean, where are we cutting this off, and where aren't we? I mean, it's a huge issue.
Yeah, no, that's right. And that's actually a conversation for another day, because that's a longer conversation, but I agree with you. So we're going to see. You know, we're going to see exactly how this unfolds. And we're going to see it over the course of, you know, the next couple of, in my mind, next couple of months. Anyway, nothing's happening anytime soon. And there's even a question whether or not they're coming back to the table now in September.
Right.
Because, you know, the rhetoric is so hot. And so that may even get pushed back. And if that gets pushed back, it's just another reason for the markets to become kind of unsettled, right?
Well, Kenny, thank you very much. Maybe we'll find something to talk about next Tuesday, huh?
Okay. See you later.
Take care, buddy. SP futures up 28, kind of right where they've been. NASDAQ futures up 90. They were down, what, 250 yesterday. So we're back 20%, 25%. See if we go any further. Be right back, Mr. Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's J-O-H-N at ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Blowing up at Stocks and Jocks. Now, Tom Allen, he's Mr. Brendan Cornan, and Jeff Joseph, he's Mr. Matt Weber. I'm staring at my new issue of Luckbox magazine. High anxiety.
I like what a sweet cover.
I like the martini. I'm not so big on the drugs. I guess I can roll with the, I don't know, do I need the heavy blanket? Don't really need that if one of the dogs is laying on me, you know, type of thing.
You got the fidget spinner on there?
Oh, yeah, but the Rubik's Cube, I don't know. Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jacks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/Jacks. S&P futures now 2850 is kind of where they've been after a wild night. Actually, a wild last 18 hours. NASDAQ futures up 89, so everybody's back 20-25%. I have a question for you guys. I don't think you'll get it at all, but I will run one by you. I just saw this one. Matty Weber, the sage of all basketball. Who was the first NBA player to shatter a backboard? I'll give you a clue. It was 1946,
ooh,
and the team was the Boston Celtics. Matty, you're supposed to have all these things. You are
well,
our sports guy.
The Celtics in the 40s is certainly not my strong point.
Right. Yeah.
The only guy I could even think of that played in the 40s, and I'm not even 100% sure that he did, was George Mikan. But
he was in the 50s, because I thought of him, too, but he was also in Minnesota.
He was a Minnesota Laker.
Yeah.
Or Minneapolis Laker.
I'll give you a clue. He also played first base for the Cubs, and he played a little bit for the Bears before becoming a pretty famous actor.
Chuck Connors.
Ding, ding, ding.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Very Chuck nice.
Connors. The Rifleman.
The Rifleman. The big man.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a physical specimen. But due to 60 cigarettes a day, he croaked from lung cancer at age 71.
60 cigarettes a day?
So three packs, yeah.
Wow.
And they never let him smoke on the rifle, but I guess he was seen once on the show with one where he didn't put it away or something. I don't know. Anyway, so Jeff, what do you, as a nobody's ever a former trader, publisher, you name it, man about town, what do you make of this? This yesterday and today and the Chinese fighting with Trump and the do you think you'd like to own a farm right about now or no?
No, I wouldn't want to have to deal with a commodity price sell-off. You look back in 2015 when the during the similar crisis, commodity sell-off sold off substantially. Copper was down about 30%. Commodities in general were off 20%. Following the beginning of a currency battle in 2015 around August. So no, I don't think commodities or farming would be the immediate solution. But it's too soon to say, as today's activity already reveals. I made the mistake of turning on CNBC for a little bit last night, and I heard the same cliches that you would hear automatically. They become almost knee jerk. Everyone's saying basically the same thing. Well, although I heard something new, I heard someone made a reference to the flight to quality of the classically defensive positions of gold, silver, and Bitcoin. He used the phrase
Bitcoin,
classically
wow.
defensive.
That's tradition.
Right.
Yeah. That's longstanding tradition, yes. Going to Bitcoin.
Yes, classically defensive, it was referred to, Bitcoin. But, of course, there's a... what do you call that? A flight? That's not a flight to quality. So, what would be the flight to Bitcoin right now?
Some kind of fear thing of some sort, or
desperation.
Whatever. Desperation.
Yeah.
Well, we were talking earlier, Jeff, that when you boil all this stuff down, it really comes down to currency flows, our supply and demand, and how much money of people of a country they pour out there. I mean, when you think things down to basic and economics and supply and demand, you pretty much can get to the root of most issues. Not all, But one thing, I was on a show yesterday, and I was they asked me about, are we going to go into a recession? And I said, well, this reminds me so much. The book, my favorite book, you know, of all the books I've read, was Freedom from Fear, because I learned so much in there that I thought other things, and I was totally wrong. So whenever somebody changes your mind on about 10 subjects, you know, they're doing a pretty good job, or you're an idiot, one or the other, meaning me. But I honestly believe that when in these shootings, I mean, I'm not going to try and pull those into the thing, but everything that happens, right, it seems to me that when everybody, when the economy is really growing at 3%, I mean, after inflation, after real inflation, we're talking about the 60s, maybe early 70s, certainly the late 50s, there's not a whole lot of social strife, because you almost really don't care if another guy is working harder than you and he makes 4 and 5, because you sit there and go, he deserves it. Or somebody else, even if you're dragging them along with a school teacher, not there's anything wrong with that, they're going to be doing 2.5, you know, 2.5, and nobody really has a bitch against anybody else. Yet it seems like when there is no growth, which I really believe there isn't, if you put a real inflation number in it, where there's no growth for a huge chunk of the economy, everybody gets this feeling that the reason why somebody is growing is because they're taking advantage of somebody else. It's no longer a zero-sum game. You know, the reason why he's ahead is he's cheating, and he's cheating me. Or these guys are benefits of taxation because I'm paying too much. Or something. You know, teacher's got a $100,000 bonus and a great retirement because I'm paying too much. I don't get the feeling that we're all moving forward together. And whenever that happens, people are always pointing fingers, which you see that almost by the second on TV and even in society. And a lot of, I think, some of what these shootings are, now, Manny's right, a lot of them are just 21-year-old kids that don't even know any of this stuff. But it seems like there's an awful lot of stress in the world. And your cover, I think, speaks to that, to a lot. I mean, am I wrong or totally wrong here? Or I see segments of the economy that never came back from 2007, 2008. And economically, you may say, look at Jeff's house. It's back up to 240 from 180. But guess what? It wasn't Jeff's house. The poor guy, the other guy got tossed out. He's still screwed somewhere. And now it's your house. You're okay. He's not. We didn't gain anything. We just replaced that guy's money with yours. I mean, or am I way off the base here?
Well, I certainly think you pegged something with respect to how we evolve and look at things during different economic periods. And I accept that notion that you said that, you know, we're not in this together. When things get tighter, then you're looking at the other guy. When things are good generally around and everyone's experiencing an uplift, you're not counting the other guy's money. But I think that that's asymptomatic, and I think you've put your finger on something there. But the broader issue is that, you know, anxiety has just been increasing since 9/11. You know, that was the turning point in our culture was 9/11. That's when anxiety started to spike as a medically diagnosed situation, and that's when pharmaceutical applications started to increase dramatically, and then this economy started to emerge around it. Now you throw in, in fact, it's somewhere in our editor's letter, we list off all the things that are out there. You know, it's currency crisis, gun violence, partisan politics, fake news, gender confusion, Russia collusion, ball of confusion. That's what we listed. And all these things continue to add up until the point where now, yeah, that's right, there is anxiety affects as many as 18.1% of Americans in the country. And of course, in typical American habit, we're going to try to buy our way out of it by pharmaceutical, holistic, you know, natural CBD, THC, fidget spinner, gravity blanket treatments, anything that will, try to alleviate that pain. But I think your broader observation is accurate, that there's a economic underpinning to this current strife. You know, it's collective. That's something everyone's experiencing because we're not moving forward together as an economy.
Why do you think, as somebody who obviously is involved in, what would you say, magazines or press? I suppose they are. I mean, it's not. Well, okay, let's say they are. Why? There's always, to me, there's a there's not a lot. Here's one thing: as I've aged, I think somebody who tells half the story almost is more disingenuous than somebody that actually tells a lie. If you leave some facts out, you know, it's worse than telling somebody a whopper sometime. And why isn't in the vernacular with XYZ? Let's just say Luxbox Magazine has 1,000 employees, and Jeff Joseph walks in and cans 100 of them. All right. Now, economically, what has just happened? The other, assuming 100 people don't come in and play video games all day long. I mean, most people, I think, show up and do something. Now, whether it's efficient or not, I don't know. But obviously, nobody, I don't think anybody walks in, puts their feet up on their desk, and doesn't do anything anywhere. Even the government, you do something, right? So what you've really done is cut the pay for the other 900 or increase their hours, because now they have to make up for the 100 that are gone. Correct.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so nobody ever says that.
It's partial news.
Yeah, right. But nobody ever says that.
Well, they partial news is peddled every day, particularly, you know, on the political side, right? I was sifting through the news over the weekend on the two shootings, and I'm still trying to get a clear picture of this, but from what I got from one source is that you have this clear in the El Paso shooting, you have a manifesto of a, you know, it's a white nationalist type of manifesto and posted on 4chan and 8chan, and that has all the markings.
Right, what are those things for those of us who don't know?
4chan and 8chan are chat groups that are kind of part of the dark web. That's where this stuff is discussed ahead of time.
And that's where the guy in New Zealand had posted before he went into the mosques, the two mosques, and started shooting people. It's the same type of a manifesto.
That's right. In fact, it was a copy and paste manifesto.
Yeah.
So that
now, when you say dark web, is it it's just a raunchy site on the regular web, or is there web?
That's right. No, this is actually, let's say, the dark portions of the web.
Okay,
this isn't accessible. And, you know, a lot of people are appalled by it, but that's the same people say that we should be restricting speech on certain platforms in certain ways. The fact of the matter is this is what our domestic security agencies follow closely to try to monitor this activity. Thank God they have a place to go where these posters feel that they're safe, but 4chan and dark chan
and also discoverable.
That's right. But so you see that one story about the El Paso shooter, and then at the same time I'm trying to get my arms around the Dayton shooter, which apparently had a completely opposite political perspective, and that he was
he shot his sister, for God's sake.
Yeah.
He was
did he do that on purpose, or he just went with her and he was shooting everybody and she happened to get in the way?
He was killed almost immediately. He was killed within 30 seconds. No one's ever going to know. He didn't leave any writings that have come up yet, so nobody knows.
Sister and boyfriend. Right.
He was killed within 30 seconds and he shot that many people?
I heard a minute.
Good Lord.
No, 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Right. The cops were there as he was about to go into the bar, and there's a video of him about to go into the bar when he gets shot by the cops on the street.
I mean, if that alone doesn't sort of tell the whole story, then I don't know what will.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to believe.
A good guy or a cop kills the bad guy, and yet within 30 seconds, and he gets 41 shots off.
Yep. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And that's not even with the bump stock. You know, apparently that was just pulling the trigger that many times.
I have a question. If I'm one of these guys, and I somehow get my paws on one of these guns with a... Where can I go practice this? I just go out in the woods somewhere?
You don't need to practice with something like that. You just spray bullets.
So I guess that solves that. But
you're not taking target practice to see how many circles you can hit and if you can get the bullseye. You're just aiming. You're just pulling the trigger and they just spray.
But how much? When I was on my little rant earlier, sorry for that, guys. But how much of it when people feel? I mean, obviously, the taxation is not even, and there's a lot of people. Again, I know people on the trading floor that are stone cold broke right now, and you know, the wife's gone, and whatever you name it, and some of them committed suicide. It's bad, but I mean, when your taxes, you look at them and go, well, how the hell am I paying this stuff? And then somebody, you know, I'm not. Well, I guess I'm going to have to, but if somebody says something stupid like, Mexican immigrants don't pay any taxes. Okay. And I don't know how many, I mean, the people in this room, and Matty Weber, since he's been listening forever, I mean, I think the three of us would all say that if you get somebody on CNBC and he starts talking about income taxes as being taxes, that the man is close to being a one percenter, right? Because there's, in the U.S., there's four legs to the tax stool, you know, the other being payroll taxes, state, and then you got state taxes and local taxes. And they're all sort of the same size. I mean, in fact, state taxes are more than income taxes. So to say that somebody's not paying any income taxes is very disingenuous. Any Mexican immigrant who's living in Pilsen is clearly paying sales tax. They're paying, mm-hmm. if they're renting a place, they're paying property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you're paying state tax, which is the same as everybody else.
Yeah.
Correct? So, I mean, to say that that person isn't paying income taxes is clearly disingenuous. Now, if you've got somebody who's totally down on their luck somewhere and thinks that the reason why their life is screwed up is because other people are stealing from them, maybe they make that reach. I'm not saying that a president ever would want somebody to go shoot somebody, but the idea, when you lob this false stuff out there and the other person doesn't go read what's actually true, who knows what might happen?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
again, you're talking about desperation. When you're talking about the public that receives that message, I think it's also an approval to go out and do something about it. That I'm the only one who can fix it, but I need your help. And that gets translated to racial activities, to prejudice, to discrimination, with the blessing, with the tacit blessing and direction of the president or political leaders.
I don't know what your religious background is, Jeff, and none of my business, but I'm sure you remember the line from Shakespeare, will nobody rid me of this troublesome priest?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, you guys killed him? Oh, my, why'd you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Was it Henry? Which one of the Henrys was that, Brendan? Was it a Henry?
Probably a Henry.
Yeah, probably a Henry VIII.
Yeah. I mean, it's the...
Among all of his wives.
Yeah, among all
when
of
he,
his
when
wives.
He couldn't get divorced.
Yeah. So, what... out of all those things, did you try all of them on the front page?
Yes.
Now, careful on those pills. There are pills on the front page.
Right, but...
And a vape pen.
Yeah, we did try them all.
I like the gummy bear.
And they're... you know, CBD has had... questionable. We've talked about this before. It's very questionable to what extent CBD addresses anxiety and pain, and it's also very variable to the person taking CBD, because everyone has different receptors in their brain that results in different reactions to it. So that I think is a big question mark with respect to how much impact it has. What's not a question mark is how expensive it is. So dosages are high and of questionable quality. It's a real question as to whether CBD is a consumer-friendly application. Yet you're seeing it in more and more places, and that will be the trend going forward. And then as it begins to proliferate in terms of retail distribution, CVS is carrying it now, Costco's beginning to carry it, Walmart is carrying CBD lines. So as that happens, prices will come down and, you know, probably just get integrated into the rest of our buying habits.
You know? I actually have you've already written the article, but I got a guy, right?
You gotta
have guys. One of my Skokie buddies, that says it all. And a good friend, he has a buddy of his from Toronto. And the family has just sold some marijuana things, properties up in Canada. But they were, and he gave me a bunch of these things, they were in the, whatever you want to call it, the fulfillment business, where they wanted the machinery for the growers. Now, for those that don't know what we're talking about, this is made from hemp. It's not made from the marijuana plants, so there's virtually no THC in it, correct? There's another...
That's right.
Drug or two that tend to relax people without getting you high.
It's below a threshold level of
right.
0.03 THC, which has been mandated by Schedule 1.
Right, but it actually, in some people, causes, you know, say if you're ready to flip somebody off in traffic, somebody will say if you take a hit of this, maybe you won't. Right, but you're right. Obviously, it affects everybody else differently. But I gave those out to some people, and they all said they liked them.
Yep.
They worked a little bit. Now, this guy claims that there's a massive difference in quality. and at their factory had they had the best because they the machine to just to squeeze the oil out of the hemp was $1.5 million, and so there is a and what these guys want to do is in this area they don't want to be a grower, they don't want to be a distributor, they don't want to be anything. They just want to be somebody who takes somebody's product. It's sort of like, you know, Gallo for a long period of time would squeeze everybody else's grapes because they had the world's best machinery for it. And people would bring their grapes over there, and why don't those guys do it instead of us going and buy a big machine? These guys wanted to be in that business. So, and his point is the same as yours. I'm trying to agree with you in a long-winded way that there is difference in the quality based on the processing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was our finding as well.
And, but how do you, were you able to, determine, like, the guys who did the good job had these kinds of machines and this kind of processing versus other people?
No, and there's certainly no way for the consumer to determine that as well. You know, there's no standard labeling practices, there's no best practices, there's no regulation. So that's the argument that we get into with speaking to physicians and manufacturers. Those stories are in this issue where they're making their case for why there should be regulation from a consumer protection standpoint.
Do you think whenever anybody makes that, let me put it this way, and I know when I'm not accusing you of being Elizabeth Warren, but when people say there needs to be regulation, does anybody think regulation works? I mean, most of the time.
I don't know if regulation works or not. I mean, you can find examples of where it does and where it doesn't. I think that's also fluid, but it's an easy crutch to say we're doing something because we're putting regulations in place. Who gets targeted by that? As you pointed out before from things even like from Dodd-Frank, the regulations sometimes have unintended consequences. The ideas behind regulations are good to stop abuses, but in effect, they're not always applied in the way that they were intended to at the very beginning.
Well, there needs to be regulation of barbershops. That means...
Well, that's because people wouldn't be bleeding anymore because originally barbershops were bleeding to cure diseases.
Well, but I mean, it costs an arm and a leg for those guys to get the license. They're registered. When's the last time somebody went around and see if the guy knows how to cut anybody's hair?
I don't know.
I'm going to say never. Well, it just becomes a revenue stream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Regulation is inflationary. There's no question about that.
But I mean, I don't. I guess what I'm saying is, when we were Utes, I don't know about you, Jeff, but if you went out and bought an electrical cord or a toaster, your mom sent you to the store. If you came back with something that didn't say UL approved on it,
yeah.
Now just because people want somebody to say, you know, who has the best vape thing or whatever, why does it have to be the government?
Mm-hmm. Because the government has the umbrella more than state or local governments do. If you allow that to happen only at the city of Chicago level, for example, you could go out and buy something that wasn't approved in the city of Chicago by going across the border to Evanston or Oak Park and getting it. And I mean, it's the same thing with the idea of taxes on cigarettes or liquor. They go across the border to Wisconsin or Indiana or to the next county.
Well, it's kind of now where I'm going.
The overall umbrella is at the federal level. That's why you've got things like preemption, that if the federal law acts in a way, it preempts anything at the state or local level, so that the least common denominator of regulations is done over the broadest territory.
I'm gonna bet that the person who wrote this article for Jeff knows more about this industry and could be the, quote, regulator tomorrow a lot easier than some mope we hire at the federal government.
Well, that's true, and I think that's true for any regulatory agency. But the flaw in that argument is that you have one guy who is the regulator who would have to pass on everything because you trust his judgment or her judgment and nobody else. And even if I were that guy, I would not be able to monitor every one of the regulatory applications. So I would have to teach you and Jeff and Maddie how to do that. And will you apply the same logic that I would to that regulation or not?
Well, for me, I would want, and again, I mean, we're kind of going afield here. For me, I would want to identify whatever the items are in there that we think are helping or hurting people. And we need to have some kind of a measure of how much you're getting in a shot. You know, we don't need to regulate who has the best whiskey, but we do need to regulate whether it's 40% alcohol or 50.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and label. I mean, it's not up to us to say buy this brand, but you know, we should at least know what's in it in terms mm-hmm. of strength. I mean, when you buy an aspirin, it'll tell you how many grains are in there.
So you're making the case for regulation, then.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but I mean, it doesn't have to be. But people could almost do that on their own.
No.
Listen, I'm the libertarian here, and I agree with your basic premise. But the question is always about how much regulation. That's always the question. It's not regulation, good or bad.
And they were never going to legalize this without their hands all over it.
Well, it's also a revenue source.
That's the whole point.
It's all a revenue source.
It's all a revenue source.
The altruistic arguments go by the wayside when revenue's involved.
Well, we'll talk about it a little bit after the break. S&P futures up only 24 now. They were up 28-something-something. NASDAQ futures up 73. They were up almost 95. So we're leaking a little, but we're way up from where we were last night. I'm Tom Howie's Mr. Brendan Carnan, Mr. Jeff Joseph. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Dr. Jackson. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Brennan Cronin, Mr. Jeff Joseph, Mr. Matt Weber. Full house this morning. Good group. S&P futures up 27.75. Feels better than saying how much we were down yesterday, although we're not back up near as much as we were down yesterday. NASDAQ futures up 88. We were down huge last night in the middle of the night when the Chinese said they're going to stabilize their currency, so we flipped about 100 spook points. And I want to be on just one of these trades one time where I get the call and I promise, less than 10 spoos, I'll even do 5. The big guy upstairs, I promise, I'll only do 5. And I'll never ask to be able to do that again. Just one time, please. Futures up 217. Rainier, we've got the DAX up 48.4%. These guys are not back anywhere near as much as they were down yesterday. They were all down 2-3% across the board. This is interesting. The FTSE is only up 4. So call that flat. FTSE's been, but it had a mind of its own since we're doing this Brexit thing with the new prime minister. It hasn't really gone with the European markets every day. Same way, but nowhere near the same intensity. CAC round up 39.7 over in Asia. Down again over here. Nikkei down 134.6%. Shanghai down 43.6%. Hang Seng, which was down the most yesterday, is down, well, sort of the least today, down 175.7%. Oil, 55.08, up 39 cents, came back a little bit. We were pushing 58 a week or so ago, and we're not anymore. Brent up 32.60.13. Natural gas, $2.10. It's the first uptick we've seen there in a while. Up 3 cents. RBOB gas, 172. Far cry from the almost $2 it was a few weeks ago. We've got gold. It's up 20 cents now. It was up more earlier. 14.76. Silver up 3 cents, 16.43. And we've got bonds, 1.75 for the 10-year. The Bund, minus 0.52, down even more. Japan, minus 0.18. UK 10-year, 0.52. So not much going on there. I'll give one more number here for those that like to look at the copper prices regarding China. 255, so no rally at all out of copper. Our president is off tweeting again. U.S. is in strong position and money is pouring in from China as trade war intensifies. He's going to stick to
those
the story.
Those are direct bank transfers, right? From the Chinese banks directly to the U.S. Treasury?
Well, into your
signed
pocket,
by
Brendan.
Xi? Signed by Xi?
No, check your bank account.
When do I get my check?
You know, where's my check? You know, was it a commercial? Well, as soon as I cash my paycheck, the guy runs off. Anyway, Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The Sports Weather Traffic Update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. We have an outstanding looking issue with the high anxiety economy cover that we tweeted out, so take a look at that. But Stocks and Jocks listeners also can receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Off to a decent start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. We do have a crash on the inbound Stevenson northbound just before Veterans Parkway. That's out near suburban Bolingbrook, southwestern suburbs. That's causing some delays. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. That earlier semi-wine spill on the Bishop Ford earlier this morning is apparently all clear, so that's good news. Eisenhower not looking great in either direction, but the earlier crash we saw on the inbound Ike is all clear, so that's good too. Edens and Kennedy traffic building, we're at an hour from O'Hare into downtown, but no accidents or issues to report. Only other crash to report is on the Edens Spur on-ramp westbound at Waukegan. That on-ramp is closed due to an earlier crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today could have some rain in the forecast for the first time in a couple of weeks, at least during the day. We'll reach a high of 79, so we cool off a bit too. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 71 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 104. Right now it's mostly clear and 90. In sports, Cubs have won 4 straight. They took care of the A's last night and held on to beat Oakland 6-5. Cubs are 2.5 up on the second-place Cardinals for first in the NL Central. White Sox have won 3 out of 4. They topped the Tigers last night 7-4 in Detroit. Diamondbacks lost to the Phillies 7-3. Chief.
Is the reliever that was supposedly going to be coming back?
He's on the IL.
No, the Brendan Morrow guy. Is he toast?
Probably.
From what I've read, it sounds like he's toast.
Yeah.
Like this year or forever?
Well,
probably forever, but at least this year.
He's 35, and he hasn't pitched since the early part of last season. And he keeps trying to come back, and he's had a surgery, and he just hasn't found it. And they're not very optimistic that he'll pitch, certainly not for the Cubs. And we'll see what he does, you know, going forward.
Well, every time he tries to come back, he gets re-injured.
Yep.
Hey. I got a question for you, Mavens. I always have questions for you guys.
I'm still on Chuck Connors.
Yeah, well, that's
that was good.
Do you remember what was the character lead character's name in The Rifleman?
Lucas McCain.
Lucas McCain, of course, right.
It was originally supposed to be Jan, and they changed it to Lucas at the last minute.
Chuck Connors was in a movie that was a sci-fi movie. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was a classic.
Was it The Giant Ants?
No. It was the first movie that featured a video game. It didn't feature a video, where a video game appeared in the movie. But it was a kind of futuristic sci-fi. Doesn't ring a bell. Remember Soylent Green?
Oh, I remember. Soylent Green.
Yeah, he was in Soylent Green.
Well, you know where he got the idea that he would be a great character or a great father figure? He was an old yeller.
Right. When you were talking about the two sports star, I was first going to go with Gene Conley.
Actually, he played for the Bears too, so three.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know he played for the Bears.
Well, I don't think even I think it was a cup of coffee there.
I knew that Chuck Connors did play for the Cubs though.
First base.
He was a first baseman.
Economically, for a guy who's supposed to know all this stuff, going back to my Milton Friedman years, have you guys ever seen a yield curve that looks like this? There has to have been one. I don't know if I've ever seen it, but just yield curve, I'll rattle this off. This is as of yesterday, April 5th or August 5th. 1 month, 2.07, 2 month, 2.08, 3 month, 2.05, 6 month, 1.99, 1 year, 1.78, 2 year, 1.59. Now get a load of this. 3 year and 5 year, 1.55. Yeah. 7 year, 1.63, 10 year, 1.75, 20 year, 2.07, and would 20 year now equals the 1 month, 30 year, 2.30. It's like this broad extended smiley face. I was asked on a radio show, what does that mean? And I have no idea. It doesn't look good to me. I mean, would you lend somebody money for 5 years and expect less back than if you do it for 1 month? I think most common sense people would say no. Why would anybody ever do that? What does this mean to you guys?
You know, credit in general still appears to be intact, though, right? I mean, if you were to, it implies that the economic expansion still has legs. And I know you question the whole notion of an economic expansion, but if we're going to go by the numbers, that's supposedly what we're in right now. And credit's kind of, it's remained intact for the most part. I mean, you know, more recently we should have picked up on the fact that, equities led the credits lower, right? That was kind of a bad leading indicator that probably told us a little break was coming. Or we could have just looked at gold for the last 6 months and noted that there'd be some dissonance here.
Well, what is this? What are these numbers? If I were to ask you that 3 years out, the interest rates are significantly lower,
yeah,
down to 1.55. What does that mean by the market's prediction of what the world's going to look like in 3 years, good or bad? I don't even know.
I don't know how to calculate that. I mean, I just don't know.
I would say that the instinctive thing would be somebody's predicting a recession out 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even know in today's world if you can take those kinds of historical predictions and use them. But clearly, and if we're talking about a 1.55...
Well, that's right. That's exactly what it would mean, though.
But now, is the market that accurate? It doesn't seem like it's been accurate for a while. How can it be with all this stuff? We can't predict what tomorrow's going to be, let alone 3 years.
Well, I've heard you talk about the economic projections now for a while, and they haven't come true. When you think about historical references and historical markers, they're not applicable anymore. And so what does that say for 3 years out? If you can't predict the short term, how can you possibly think about what's going to happen 3 years from now?
Well, I think if you listen to, I don't know if you've ever listened, Jeff, when Carl Denninger is on, but he has an interesting view of economics and there's a lot of research. And I've come to his, well, whenever I look at the CPI, I think the biggest thing we talked earlier about not getting the right information out of people, and when you give people half the story sometimes, I think one of the things that is absolutely skews all these numbers and really skews the numbers of individual families and really individual people, is the increasing toll that medical care has taken on a society. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't, as a, in my mind, you can't have something make it to 20% of the GDP and foolishly, ignorantly, well, whatever adjective you want to put on it, say that it's 6% of your CPI.
Right.
And you can't say that prescription drug prices are 1.5% of somebody's basket when we all know people that are on Social Security that it's 80% of their basket. Mm-hmm. I mean, so as long as you're willing to be fooled by your own numbers, I honestly believe that the difference between there's people here in the building that I know real well that are janitors and so forth, and they're the person. They do extra work. They're the family of four making 55 to 60 grand a year, maybe with some odd jobs and other stuff. And if that person is paying his own health care, it's like he's making 30. Mm-hmm. If he's getting it paid for by him, it's like he's making 70. The dramatic difference. So as long as we're lying to ourselves about this whole piece, plus, if I were to take even the Jeff Joseph family and say, I'm firing your ass some luck box, by the way, you start sending me $1,500 a month, and your deductible is $6,500, and one of your kids, if you have any, breaks his ankle playing soccer, and it's a $6,500 deal. All of a sudden, your life is totally different. So we have chunks of society that are not part of the numbers that we're bleating out like TV, like a bazoo. Mm-hmm.
Scenario, it assumes that you're able to get insurance coverage.
Right. Well, but my last step here, and then I promise to shut up, is that if you're hurt like that, where all of a sudden all your income and maybe on your credit card is a $6,500 deductible in the emergency room for your kid's ankle, the chances of you going out and buying a Nehru jacket or a big screen TV the next week are pretty slow. So we actually are cutting the demand in the rest of society. So it doesn't surprise me that if we have one chunk that we're saying is 6 when it's really 20, that it's impacting all the rest. Because there isn't enough money to go out and buy booze, to buy cars, to buy whatever. And it doesn't surprise me that those prices aren't going up because it's all stuck in one area.
Mm-hmm.
It's like in the 70s if we just said, oh, it's only oil.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So anyway, but I think until we actually get the numbers to where they're legit in my mind, I don't even know whether we're on foot or horseback. So please, you guys talk. I've talked too much.
You did promise to shut up.
Yes, I did. Well, when you set the subject up, Jeff, what do you think?
Well, again, medical expenses and education are the two primary expenses that are affecting most households. And
6% and 6% each in the CPI.
Yeah, yeah, hardly representative of the actual spend. Particularly when you look on an after-tax basis, you can imagine, you know, that probably was 80 or 90% of many incomes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it. It just causes you to wonder then why both political parties aren't making this the primary issue instead of the other things that they're focused on. You know, and then it was interesting in the last debates to see Democratic Party run away from Obamacare too. That was really
and Obama, and not only Obamacare
and Obama.
But everything. Yeah.
That was quite an interesting spectacle.
Well, I mean, I have to believe that people aren't bashful. This is America. That if you go through Iowa or wherever these guys go, and you go from diner to diner, that there's got to be some 60-year-old blue-haired lady that's going to raise a huge bitch about her insurance and this Obamacare blows. I mean, you're not going to get through diner one without hearing that from five people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Americans are all that shy about saying stuff like that.
That's
especially
because
it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you're not going to go the next day say, what a spectacular deal this is for people if you want to vote.
No, but the theory should be more universal health care at affordable costs. And that's not what the Republican or Trump administration has offered. In fact, all of the things that they have proposed is to take away rights to health care. So I think that's the oddity, why that isn't being brought up more. I also agree with you on the, you know, when you're looking at the cost of health care and the cost of pharmaceuticals, it's amazing how rampant that has been, and nothing is being done about that.
In defense of Trump, and to a certain extent Obama, Trump entered office with the promise to spank the pharmaceuticals and Boeing. How'd that work out for him?
How did it work out for him?
Yeah, he didn't do either one.
He hasn't done either one of them.
Well, now the question is it impossible to do? Are they so big? Could Solomon not do it?
Well,
George
we'll see,
Washington
we'll,
not do it?
With respect to Boeing, we'll see what happens within the next year based on the 737 fiasco and how that's going to take an impact on theirs. Also, how is that going to impact regulations? When you're talking about regulations before, you know, there's a regulatory issue with Boeing and the approval, the self-approval of some of their software impacts that I think is also going to come home to roost pretty soon. But, you know, there's one of the examples that you've got a duopoly. It was in the book that Jeff mentioned a couple of weeks ago, The Myth of Capitalism, that you've got a duopoly in the world between Airbus and Boeing. And they can pretty much do anything they want because there's only two of them.
All right, I've trapped you. I'm gonna ask you the same question I did 20 minutes ago. Is there any way that a government monopoly or that a government agency can monitor or regulate a monopoly over the long pole and get anybody a break?
No, I don't think there is.
Jeff?
Well, you can propose. There can be Justice Department initiatives that break up companies or that treat them as public utilities or that mandate spinoffs. There is ways to regulate against growing monopsony or monopoly interests.
Successful do you think we've been against Commonwealth Edison or People's Gas for 100 years?
Well, we reset the baby bells years ago. We talked about that. Obviously, then the Justice Department was asleep at the wheel for a long time since. But there are simple things that you can do by mandating breakups or by nixing acquisitions. You know, when you wonder how Instagram and YouTube were able to be acquired and the monopolies that some of these companies have right now, like Google and Amazon and Facebook, as a result of their unchecked acquisitions, some of those could have been stopped.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with what Jeff said, except for the one thing that's missing is the political will to do it. And yes, the laws may be in effect to stop monopolies, to break up monopolies, but is there the political will to have somebody who's going to be in office long enough? I mean, even if you think about a president, whether it's Trump or Obama or Bush or anybody else, when you think about it, they've got a maximum of 8 years and the possibility of only 4 years. So the whole first administration, if they're gearing up to break up an AT&T or to break up a Facebook, it's going to take a couple of years to first get the people in place that would affect that change, and second of all, get the information that would be acceptable to Congress to take some action or the Justice Department to come in. And then at most you've got 4 years in a second term to implement that, and there's a more of a tendency of the pendulum swinging back and forth from an Obama to a Trump, from a Clinton to a Bush, from a Bush to an Obama. So the political winds change, and I think that's not enough time to affect the change that we're talking about to break up a monopoly because of the political will.
I think we've just identified two issues that are potentially bipartisan that will be large issues in 2020. There is the political will now on both sides of the aisle with respect to the large tech companies like Facebook mm-hmm. and Amazon and Google to start to check their privacy and data abuses and their anti-competitive practices. That political will is increasing. You also see there's no question that medical care and pharmaceutical prices will reemerge as a dominant campaign issue in 2020. I would also say that, you know, even though it's under the radar and doesn't get a lot of press, that Trump has made real attempts on pharmaceutical prices. He has actually effectively lowered some pharmaceutical prices. Only 5 or 6 days ago, the FDA has announced a proposal from Health and Human Services that the Trump administration is seeking an active way to import drugs from Canada to directly compete with U.S. pharmaceuticals, which is really a big event.
Mm-hmm.
When you do that, you can import the same drugs from the same companies. I mean, Talk about a circle.
Well, that's the question about where those drugs are coming from that come through Canada.
Well, I mean, let's. I don't know how I got like this, but I should change my whole personality. But if you can't describe the first step, it's hard to. And my concern with these guys is they come in about here, at level 9. But you need the very basic. How long should a patent for a drug be?
Sure.
17 years. Viagra, they managed to get 19 years. How they pull that off, I have no idea. And is there any limit, to how much you can charge during however long the patent is? I mean, could Jonas Salk have charged $5,000 for a polio vaccine if he had gotten a patent? Is there any limit? Is there any question of cost? Should it be 10 times, 20 times, 100 times what that pill actually... I don't want to hear any...
Do you believe in the free market?
But it's not free. Because it's not free for two reasons. One, you got a patent on it. It's given to you by government. Mm-hmm. And the other point is you're not paying for it.
But what will the market bear? What will the market bear?
Well, okay, but if you're not making the payment decision, that decision becomes skewed.
I agree with you completely.
The first point being that the patent is, in effect, a form of subsidy. It's a subsidy. Right. It's just like subsidizing crops, so it's not a free market. So
and I think there's a distinction from a company that buys a patent by buying the corporation that had the patent or discovers a drug in the first place.
Well, now you're in a wholly different area that you can't just be the big fatso who's ahead of Merck and never did anything versus the guy who actually invented the Viagra.
Mm-hmm.
That guy doesn't make any money. The guy who invented it.
I know. That's one of the problems, that the larger pharmaceutical companies that bought smaller companies and bought the patents are able to extend the patent for a longer period of time and increase the price. I mean, this is another example that bad facts make bad laws. And if you find a guy like Martin Shirelli who buys the drugs and increases it by 10,000% and puts that money in his pocket, then that's something that the American public and even Congress are going to go after and try to find something. And a reaction to that example is going to put bad laws and bad regulations on the books.
But it is...
That's right.
You've met the...
And he has paid the price for it, too.
Right, well,
one thing in mind, though. It's $2.7 billion at last estimates to get a drug through phase 3 trials.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 12% of drugs that enter phase 2 trials ever make it through completely. So if 12%, $2.7 billion, you know, you've got $30 billion that you've got to recoup on that one drug that makes it through.
I'm going to say that the people who put this Luckbox magazine together, not that I know the editor or anything, I'm going to say that you could probably find a way, if you were to find a way to cut that number by 90%, you're not going to get any bitching from me or Brandon or Matt Weber or any of the listeners. You are going to, Pfizer or Merck, you'll feel like you guys skewered them. Hmm. They don't want anybody else to get through. If you were to make it that the three of us came up with a drug and we could get through for $1 million that we could borrow from our buddies, do you think that would be popular?
Well, that's not really what's happening now, though. I mean, the pharmaceutical technologies is all in the hands of small biotech right now. The Merck, Pfizer, Glaxo, Wellcome, the large pharmaceutical companies are no longer developing new drugs. They are acquiring early stage drugs from biotech companies. They are in the distribution business. They're no longer in the R&D business any longer. It's kind of like what happened with media. It's a roll-up strategy. You know, the large media companies aren't securing audience with content anymore. They're buying up small content platforms that have acquired their own audiences. So now you're a biotech company. You've got to raise money through outside private funding. You know, it's private investors that fund most of the biotech companies. The NIH and the government and government grants is very little of the biotech funding that goes into pharmaceutical R&D. So, you know, yet we're still the engine that's producing 70% of the pharmaceuticals worldwide. So we have a system that's working from a discovery standpoint. It's just not working from a distribution standpoint.
I actually think, and I've worked with a couple people, that very small sample. One was a bio device, and one was a drug. Both of them essentially they ended up, they could get nowhere, nowhere, until some company said, we'll do a marketing deal with you. And they, so one was Merck and one was somebody else. And all they did was totally torpedo the product.
Yeah, put it on the shelf.
Yeah. And I mean, those guys are, I think somehow or another we got to open that up somehow. We'll talk about that next week. This is a, because obviously a big deal. SP Futures up 24.25. NASDAQ Futures up 79.25. And I would go buy this luck box thing because the cover is that neat. Really, I got mine for free, so I guess I'm prejudiced, but it's really neat. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Some outside guy did that.
Yeah.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.